Welcome to Sustainable Talks with NNN, Nicolo Giusti and
Niccolo Duranti,
where we talk about sustainability in the fashion supply chain.
We interview the best players in fashion and challenge them to the real full sustainability.
From material suppliers to factories, designers, sustainable association, and more. We want to make clarity if a fashion can be sustainable or not.
This podcast is sponsored by ourselves and no one else with our time, experience and fun.
We hope you have fun to listen to us and spread the word.
You can find us also in Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Just search us as Sustainable Talks with NNN and you will find us.
Have fun!
Our technology has got the phenols in there, but as a second part, the natural crosslinker. And that enables for the first time actually to make a soft, vegetable tanned leather.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our new talk of Sustainable Talks with NNN. We lost one N on the way. Hopefully, it will come back soon. Today, an exciting topic. Again, talking about leather and more sustainable leather with an expert, with Thomas Lamparter. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Hi, Nicolo. Fine. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very happy to talk to you again. Thomas grew up in a tannery. He's also a sustainability enthusiast and co-founder of a kids shoe brand, very nice German kids shoe brand called Richard Boots. But more than everything, he's also head of sales at Oliven Leather and Wet Green. We are going to talk about leather tan in a different way. Everybody knows chrome leather. Everybody knows vegetable leather or synthetic tanning, but this is a different way of tanning. I mean, not very new. You will tell us a little bit more during the talk, Thomas. First of all, what is sustainability for you, for Thomas?
Yes, for me, a sustainable product is something which is well made, so certain craftsmanship, to be durable, timeless, repairable, something which over time actually develops a nice patina and can either be handed on to the next generation, or if you look at, for example, kid shoes, not only buy for one kid, but actually rather maybe spend euros more, have a product which you can then hand on to your second, third kid, or maybe sell it to someone else who has got a couple of kids who can reuse it and reuse it. And if a little bit something breaks, you can easily repair it, take it to your local shoemaker and use it again. So that is, whether it's for shoes, for a bag, a car, whatever you make, it should be ready for circularity and not make something a little bit less bad, but actually something good.
I want to ask you something, Thomas. You touched already an interesting point that everybody's talking about, that is circularity. What is for you a circular leather?
Yeah, for me, leather is actually the perfect example for a circular product. The raw material being available, if you would not use it, it would go to landfill and actually be a waste of a resource. If somebody would today say, we've been dumping it all the time, why don't we make leather from it? It probably even won the Nobel Prize for coming up with the circular product. In order to become really circular, of course, it should be made in a way that it can remain in a circle. So to not take, let's say, heavy metal, other metals which need mining, so put it into a skin and to basically contaminate it with that. Of course, you want to make it long-lasting or not biodegradable or so, and that is the key target in the very beginning, of course, and the way how it should be treated, and Oli is a perfect example for that, using a byproduct to tan skin, that is just the perfect example of circularity. In the end, you can take it and basically use it and put it into your compost. It should be in a way that it does not harm the environment where you put it into. It doesn't matter how long it may take until it biodegrades. And interesting part is the more vegetable tanning you do, the more natural actually you go, the longer lasting it will be.
That's the good circular part of the leather, if it's done in the right way. But it's not always done in the right way, Thomas. We know that. You've grown up in a tannery, you have seen good practice, you may have seen also not very good practice. And that's maybe why some people thinks that leather is not a sustainable product. Can you go more in deep into that? Why do you think that some people think that leather is not a sustainable product?
Most likely based on misinformation, probably in 95% or 98% white tanneries will be making leather in as sustainable way as they can do. But of course, it depends on what chemicals they put into it. And if you look to the press, of course, bad press always sells better than good press. I think in the industry, they've started now, but maybe haven't done a great job the last couple years or decades to actually promote leather in a positive way to what it actually is, because it is the perfect example of a circular product if it is being done in the right way. Of course, when it then comes to the actual tanning, that also depends on the customers, which are the brands and the final consumers, and the brands who then at some point say, okay, I want to run with best available technology, and I may have to invest some extra money, because normally the more sustainable something is made, the more expensive it is, unfortunately, at least in the beginnings. And for example, chrome tanning is simply damn cheap. Or if you look to synthetic tannings based on crude oil, its environmental impacts are not really calculated into the costs. Somehow that is offset to the public. So if that would change, suddenly the circular products coming from plant-based tanning basically would most likely be suddenly much more pricely attractive than it is today.
What kind of things people need to pay attention when they buy leather? How do they recognize that it's not a really bad leather?
Yeah, they should look at to basically how is it tanned, what technology. That maybe most people in sales, if you and I go to a shop, could or should be able to answer. And the next part would maybe be to look what other standards is it maybe complying to, the leather. Is there any label with it which makes sense, or is it an? But they should also ask where is it made. Or who made it, in which country, can I look it up? Can I maybe even track it to where does it actually come from? Where does the hide come from? Brands could do a much better job on promoting what they are doing, because I think there are many brands out there who are already paying more or paying a premium for the leather they are buying, or the leather products they are buying coming from tanneries meeting very high standards. Somehow they seem to be afraid of actually communicating that.
And going back, you spoke about the tanning method. The people need to be aware about the tanning method, how the leather is tanned. And then we go to basically your initiative, to your project, to Olivian Leather. That is a new way of tanning leather. Do you want to tell us a little bit more, Thomas?
We are out there since almost 10 years now. If you look to how long it took, chrome tanning was more than 40 years to actually become established in the industry. And the tanning sector is very conservative. With our technology having been developed about roughly 10 years ago, coming to market, and the first customer at that time being BMW with the electric i3, what we then found out when they actually launched it, also supplying to some, and let's say upholstery for Vitra or into the fashion industry, to brands like Hugo Boss, Armani, and so on. It's a new technology, basically from a tanner's point of view, because we always used to have vegetable tanning in the classical way using the phenols, which normally come up with a more, let's say, stiff, heavier leather. So not super soft Napa types. You always needed other technologies to actually achieve that, which was actually the main driver with then chrome tanning at the time, who came up with, was not only cheap, but it enabled for the first time soft leathers at large quantities, especially then with the Industrial Revolution. And the people not having maybe one or two pair, but I don't know, some people have 10 pair, 20 pairs of shoes at home or more. So that needs to come from somewhere. And then the synthetic tanning came up, maybe the most prominent one being glutaraldehyde for the chrome-free leathers or metal-free leathers. Of course, is maybe better for the consumer because there's not the metal inside, but for the person in the tannery, it's probably much more risky to work with than a chrome as a metal.
Why?
Then if you get to dark skin contact, it causes heavy damage to the skin, or if you, let's say, for the air coming out of that product is harmful for the lungs, which is why it's on the watch list at the moment from the European Union to see, okay, is this really be a solution? Because suddenly something like chrome tanning is under control for that. And of course, there's always the risk of hexavalent chromium or chrome 6 to be formed. depends on how many on many factors in the tannery, what is happening, or the person wearing it.
If you do the right tanning in the right way, then you shouldn't have it.
Yes, there's always a slightly risk will always remain, but normally it should be fine. Mm-hmm. But if you look to that synthetic tanning like glutaraldehyde, highly reactive, let's say a good example is the GT50, the very highly concentrated one. If you would eat it within half an hour, you would be dead and would not be a nice suicide. And especially as in many tanneries, people not so well educated to maybe work and handle with the chemicals. And then especially handling such a chemical is risky. And then we come with a really contrast with our wet green technology to make olive leather. It is a byproduct from olive growing. We can use whether it's the leaves or the pomace or the black water, so or the olive mill wastewater. What we then do is we extract a certain molecule, the oleuropein, which is a product which makes actually olive oil and the table olive so healthy. It's a very strong natural cross-linker. And it has got something unique in nature. It has got two binding mechanisms. So normally you've got the phenols, which basically sit at the hide and on the leather and basically fill it up and by that tan it. Or you've got the synthetic tanning, which do a cross-linking of the fiber structure. Our technology has got the phenols in there, but as a second part, the natural cross-linker. And that enables for the first time actually to make a soft vegetable tanned leather. And that's why you will find olive leather, whether it's fashion gloves, super soft garments, yeah, in many different colors, two shoes, yeah, a little bit more stiff maybe.
This is the Richard boots, right?
Exactly. That's, for example, a Richard boot.
Nice.
Maybe even until a belt or saddlery leather. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And in that case, a tanning agent, which has got not only cradle certificate, but also, for example, Dermot has a very good certificate, and that is important for the health of the or the safety of the workers in the tannery, that you suddenly have with that skin sensitivity test of Dermatest a tanning agent which you could actually even probably taste if you would want to, you know, put it on your skin. It's nothing harmful in there.
Can we say it's kind of tea, it's kind of infusion of olive waste?
Absolutely, yeah. It's extracting in the same way like you would normally make a tea. Yeah, you brew it and then you extract and you concentrate it. And in the end, you can say you simply borrow the water, you take it from the river, ideally, you clean it, use it in the tanning, you clean it again and can send it back, except for the one for the small percentage which remains in the leather. So yeah. I think that is a perfect example for circularity.
Thomas, you mentioned about certification. You are cradle to cradle certified and you mentioned something more. So I want to ask you what's your approach on certification and are they important?
Of course, there are so many certificates out there and you have to then look to what actually is out there, which makes sense. Is it just to have some label with not much of a meaning, but to at least have something to show to the consumer, or is it something which actually has an impact? And when we look to, let's say, safety for the people in the tannery, handling chemicals, multiple chemicals, of course, in a tannery, and we said, okay, something like the Dermatest seal of approval, which you would have normally for shampoo, skin creams, and all sorts of stuff, then you at least know as a person working in the tannery, this is a healthy and safe tanning agent. And then we also look to what else makes sense. Yeah, we look into this whole topic of circularity, leather being the ideal circular product in that case. The tanning agent got certified by the Cradle to Cradle organization, and we achieved very good. Not very good, it's a gold standard. So it's the very first and the only tanning agent so far which actually achieved not only a cradle-to-cradle certificate, but even a gold level.
Thomas, but why did you choose cradle-to-cradle certification? Couldn't you work with, I don't know, Oikotex? Couldn't you work with the leather working group to find a standard for that?
Yeah, of course, other labels would be available there as well. But if you then look, I think in many cases, at least personally, my opinion is it's also a lot about, of course, money-making. If I can get a label which, from a sustainable point of view, doesn't make sense because it would still say, okay, chrome tanning is great, metal tanning is great, synthetic tanning all is great. What is then the point in actually saying I'll go for such a label, which we could easily achieve, but why should I spend money there? Because in the end, of course, what is the benefit for the consumer? They must have something which they can rely on. And if I can get a certificate for any kind of tanning, what is it worth? Nothing.
So you want to distinguish the way you are certified in a different category, basically, of what's the standard way of tanning leather.
Exactly. So anyways, the way how we are tanning is different. The whole philosophy about it is different. Yeah? We are more into this natural leather solutions, not just selling chemicals. Today, many people are asking about LCAs, but hey, you can get LCAs for anything, but also nothing. Because if you look to it, let's say if you want to know mining, yeah? What is the impact of mining, the true impact of mining or fracking? So the data available is... nobody gives it to you. So then the question is, what is it worth enough?
So you basically, if you want to find out what's the impact of chrome tanned leather, and you want to check the impact of extracting the chrome, this is not available as data.
Nobody could show it to me so far. And we've been asked so many organizations, same for let's say synthetic tanning agents coming from crude oil, the oil rig where it would come from, or the fracking. We've been asking so many questions, and the people cannot provide us with data. We would be able to tell you from the plantation till 1 kilogram of tanning agent what is the full impact. But it seems that many brands out there are not really pursuing that full picture. Instead of having a negative impact of using something, you should get credits for example, using the byproducts from olive growing, like the leaves, which would normally get, for example, burned. So you don't really get credits for yet, or hardly anything, or for using a skin, you know, which would normally be dumped. It ends up in landfill. There's no real value to that, to say, okay, how can I use that in my, let's say, LCA for proper calculation? The credits for using something to doing recycling, actually upcycling, should be much more. And then, of course, to see, okay, then there will be different grades of or credits for what impact your tanning methodology you're using has.
This is very interesting topic, Thomas, to use credit for the waste that you use, but brands or news have not been talking about that yet. Do you see this topic coming up soon with new regulation or new way of calculate sustainability, like that they really start to calculate minus 10 because you use a waste material?
Not yet. Some slowly, I think, trying to seeing that there are certain limits to, for example, the LCAs. I think that the whole, let's say, accountability will play a role in there. And with legislation and rules changing for this topic of circularity, I think that the people will ask more and more, but it's very slow.
So the question I want to ask you, Thomas, with your experience, is how do we try to avoid greenwashing, or how do we instruct new people, new generation, to avoid it? I mean, we often talk about it in sustainable talks, but it's really a hot topic. So do you have any suggestion on it?
I think the key point is transparency and asking questions. So not to take anything just for granted because some people tell you this is how it is. Question whatever people are telling you, is this really the case? Use common sense as well, whether something really makes sense in the way how it is being presented. Also to ask, what is a product made of? The question is also, how can it be recycled and how? So is it ready for circularity? And also, what measuring tools are out there, and what maybe, how can they be improved? Yeah? And if you don't really feel confident that the answers you have been given till then, either not touch it, or say, okay, yes, I believe in it. Let's have a deeper dig into it to be assured, yes, this really is what they're saying.
So be transparent, be honest. Use leather and use leather tanned with olive. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for introducing us this project, and good luck for everything.
Thank you very much.
If you like this episode and you would like to learn more about fashion and sustainability, check out the Sustainable Academy, a community of people like me and like you that like fashion and sustainability and they want to clean the greenwash. Sustainableacademy.org.